Good morning and welcome to WandaSam, a Black Art and Culture program of the African Media Network. Well, once again, I am broadcasting in the diaspora, and yesterday I was having some technical difficulties. I wasn't able to play the interview that I played with one Baker, one director of TV, which is meeting today at 2 o'clock. This is so at Cinema by the Bay. As you would not eat, happening a fundraising in Richmond, California on Sunday, November 6th. If you're in the Los Angeles area, there's a really wonderful documentary film festival happening. I believe at 1 o'clock, if you check the book, it's also on this. And also in Oakland, California, the Rachu Chu is having an event honoring the dead at, I believe, their name in college. I'll find more information about that, and I'll post it at once. So without further ado, I'm going to start with the first interview with Baker White, talking about films out of Sierra Leone.
I know your film, the Sierra Leone Refugee All-Stars, and I've met members of the band when they've come through on tours. Sorry, I missed them when they came through with the New Orleans CD. That was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was really happy to see that you got this new media project, We Own TV. Looks really interesting. So tell us about We Own TV, this media project, and what do you have in store for audiences at Cinema by the Bay this weekend?
Yeah, well, the project started actually as was outreach activity for the Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars film.
Mm-hmm.
Black Nature, who's the youngest member of the band, had actually moved to the Bay Area I guess that would be maybe 2 years after the film came out, but the band had been touring, and he is actually by about two decades the youngest member of the group. And we found out a way to get him involved with the GED program. So he was staying on an educational visa in between touring activities. And that was wonderful for just a whole bunch of reasons, but we had him in San Francisco, and he'd taken a huge interest in anything related to production during the film. So even years before that, you know, the first year, maybe the first day that we met him filming, he was just all full of questions. How to use the camera? What do you use to do that? What are these microphones for? And, you know, we were in production for 3 years, so our relationship with him really grew, and, you know, his interest in production was really clear from the beginning. We actually even used some of the footage that he shot over those 3 years in the film. But after the film came out, we wanted to put together a curriculum, and we were going to go back and teach a video production training workshop in Sierra Leone together with Black Nature. So Zach Niles, who's the co-director along with myself in Nature. And we worked a little bit with the Bay Area Video Coalition to come up with our curriculum, and we ran that in the summer of 2009. Mm-hmm. And we had such an overwhelmingly positive response from the group that we worked with that we left and immediately started talking about what can we do next. And we had hired someone named Arthur Pratt, who's a local pastor in Freetown, but also works with street kids doing theater, and, you know, he's an amateur filmmaker. And so we talked together with him. And to make a long story short, we wound up making sure that we at least were going to do something once a year. And over the last 2 years, that's developed into we formed a nonprofit organization in Sierra Leone, opened up a media center. We have education 365 days a year in the center. And this group of young, talented filmmakers we've been working with has kind of formed together as a production entity. So what we have in store on Saturday is a selection of the films that the young filmmakers from that make up We Have TV have been working on for the last 2 years.
Oh, wow, that sounds really exciting. So how many films are you going to be showing?
There are 8 shorts. One of them is kind of, I guess you'd call it like a programmatic trailer. Interviews with Arthur Pratt, who's, you know, one of 3 managers right now working in the center, and kind of selects from, little sound bites and selects from the filmmakers themselves. So somewhere between a documentary and a trailer about what the program is. And then all the other films are the student-made films, predominantly narrative fiction, narrative shorts, fiction shorts.
Yeah.
And then a music video, which is they produce a lot of music videos that are really great. But it's one of the things that they do that kind of branches into the realm of freelance work, because there's a lot of interest in local musicians to have music videos made.
Right. Yeah, and I was wondering, do you have, like, girl directors as well as young men directing the films?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we thought, before we brought the curriculum over there, we thought about a lot of different things beyond what production techniques were we going to teach. And so one of the things we did, even with the first workshop, is that we kind of announced ourselves as a 50-50 program in Sierra Leone. The 50-50 thing has come up with a lot of different NGOs and nonprofits working in the area, making sure that the services that they provide are equally offered to both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that from the very beginning, and it was really interesting because when we polled everybody, I don't know if this would be the same as in the States, who wants to be a producer, who wants to be a director, who wants to be an actor, who wants to be an actress. We were pretty much split 50-50 down the middle, where 50% of the women wanted to be actresses and the men wanted to be the producer-director. Not 100% that way, but it was pretty close. And we talked a lot about what it means to become a media maker. And even in the course of 1 month, there was a lot of interest in the women to write and direct and produce. And we stay really consistent with wanting to encourage people to just creatively explore their ideas. And that may mean that you play many roles in the course of what it means to produce a short film. But just last year, we launched the Women's Voices Initiative, and we promoted one of the young women filmmakers to run that. And so she produces and directs both fiction film and documentary. And then in terms of what we're screening on Friday, it's a good mix because there are 3 short films called Youth, Family, and Charity that kind of wrote as a group. But that is, we have a woman director in that, and the way that it was written was very collaborative. But yeah, it's a big part of what we do is try and promote strong women's voices within the group. And Michaela Salu is the name of the woman who's running that program.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. For audiences that don't necessarily know the Refugee All-Stars, which is sort of how we came to know, for a lot of people, how they came to know Sierra Leone, let alone, the men that you highlight in the film, you know, that are basically sort of goodwill ambassadors. It's, you know, the film shows a country that's been at war for a long time, and the members of the band have suffered. Many of them are, you know, disabled because of what happened in the war. And I was wondering if you could talk about Sierra Leone 2011, Sierra Leone 2010, 9, 8.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like now? And these children, you know, how are they using this vehicle to imagine, you know, the country that they want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good question, too, because the country's changed a lot since I've been there.
Okay.
And I started my 2002 was the year that we started working on the Refugee All-Stars Project. So the war was officially declared over in 2001. So 2011 is a really significant year. First and foremost, it's the 50th anniversary of independence in the country. That was celebrated in April of this year. And, you know, we're coming up on 10 years from the anniversary, from the end of the war. And they were the recipient of one of the largest peacekeeping missions in the history of the UN peacekeeping efforts. And I think the country's doing incredibly well. But those are three things right there that, that are definitely cause for celebration. And to me, that's what it feels like to be in Sierra Leone right now. There's a really positive attitude. People are really kind of embracing what that means. You know, there's a lot of campaigns around change when a country's been through what they've been through. And I think what the most important thing is how does the country themselves embrace that and what that means? Because the truth is, after the peacekeeping mission, a lot of the funds associated with all the international aid organizations that are working there, they leave. So the economy kind of takes a hit because there was quite a bit of money there during crisis response. And then they're kind of tasked with their, you know, being the shepherds of what's going to happen with their country. And I think it's been really beautiful the way that the country has kind of stepped up because the peacekeeping, the big drawdown started in 2007. So there was a bit of a scare about what that was going to look like. But right now, it's doing really well. Every time I go back, which has been either once or twice a year, there's some significant piece of infrastructure developed, like really, you know, obvious development, whether it's electricity showing up in different neighborhoods. But there's also just, like I was saying, the spirit of change and really taking ownership for what that means. And, you know, it's our responsibility to take part in our nation building. And then you also asked about, you mentioned the children. And I think one of the tragedies of the war is, you know, it was a decade-long civil war. So the young adults of the country right now were the children during the Civil War. A lot of them missed out on education, like formal education. A lot of them lost their parents. Over 50% of the country was displaced at one point, whether within the country or in a refugee camp. And so, you know, I'm actually really inspired by the group that I work with because we're not really a youth program. We're kind of focusing on young adults. And a part of that's because exactly what I was just talking about is that the youth are now the young adults, and it, you know, it's their responsibility to decide what's going to happen with their country. And since a lot of them did miss out on formal education, I kind of see what we're doing with We Own TV is a bit of vocational training too, because there is a real hunger for people to try and figure out what they want to do with their time and with their day. And so, yeah, it's a big part of what We on TV does is try and take the positive energy that I feel is there and try and provide opportunities and outlets for people to kind of express themselves, to occupy their time in a positive and constructive way. And media is a really great way to do that because you can – you can produce, you know, short films, documentaries, music, and share them around. It's provided opportunities for members of the group to be able to travel around. One of the managers has been on an exchange program with a school in the UK, teaching production techniques to school kids in the UK and Hull, and yeah. So I'm proud of the group and what they're doing.
Mhm. That's really wonderful. Do you know about the ITVS I guess initiative Women and Girls Lead, and it started kicked off on October 11th, I believe, and every Tuesday they were showing a series of five films that looked at War and Peace and women and girls' role in being peacemakers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was wondering if you knew about that, considering you know, some of the work that you're doing around the 50-50 that you mentioned. I was wondering
mm-hmm.
if you knew about that.
I didn't. That's
oh.
really so.
Okay.
It's Independent Lens is airing that on. PBS
once a week. Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And it's a 5-part PBS miniseries, which is a global media initiative on the roles of women in peace and conflict. And so I believe it might conclude either tonight or next week. I'm not certain. I have to count the five Tuesdays. But it's also part of it's a worldwide plan, and actually they're PBS has committed to making more films around that theme for a number of years to come, and they've got a lot of partners. And I'm thinking you should be one of those partners because you're doing the same kind of work. So I'm just like dropping that out there.
I think I'm really excited about this the women's producing initiative because
mm-hmm.
we were already doing that work, but we just hadn't put it underneath that umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's so interesting, I'm really glad that we did, because to see, it kind of created a position for Michaela. And then she's the first woman within the group actually to hold a managerial position now.
Uh-huh.
And it's really interesting. It changed the number of, like in some ways I can say nothing changed if you look at the structure. But to actually promote her into that position and to give it a name and to kind of to talk about with the whole group why it's important, it actually had like a profound effect. The group, the group of young filmmakers that we work with is pretty much the same that it was before we kind of decided to create this role and position for Michaela.
Mm-hmm.
But it really gave like a lot of extra confidence to some of the other women in the group and to Michaela to really look at herself as, I mean, she was already a talented young filmmaker, but I'm a real leader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a producer in this group just as important as everybody else. And so I'm really excited about it. And we launched that this summer, so we have a handful of projects in production, not finished yet,
mm-hmm.
within that she's kind of like either taking the lead on as the filmmaker or she's kind of mentoring some of the other women within the group. But yeah, I'll definitely look into ITVS,
mm-hmm.
The Independent Lens's possible
right.
broadcast partner, and
mm-hmm.
but
yeah.
I just wanted to say that too
mm-hmm.
about my experience, what it was like to think about what it means to kind of to create a role and position for someone who is already kind of a part of the group. But I think specifically when they're kind of working against the pretty, you know. There's pretty formed ideas about gender roles in the developing world, and so it made like a really big difference in terms of just how willing people were to kind of step forward in a room, raise their hand, share their ideas, and feel like there was interest in hearing it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I was just looking at your bio. You know, your title in We Own TV. Creative director and founder, and says that you are a multidisciplinary artist based in the Bay Area in a
mm-hmm.
perpetual state of creation and collaboration. Recent work in film, video, and the free arts has been awarded and supported by Creative Capital Freedom to Create, the California Council of Humanities, and the Bay Area Video Coalition. Is that the one in Berkeley?
The Bay Area Video Coalition is actually close to ITVS. They're down on 18th and Mariposa and Folsom.
Okay.
I think right on the corner right there.
Yeah, by
they're great.
Yeah.
They do. They have a lot of youth filmmaking programs, and they do computer training, video production training, post production training.
Mm-hmm.
They've got, you know, good post production facilities within the center, and you know, they offer classes to anyone within the community. They also took over public access.
Oh, okay.
Television.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I think that was last year. So that's kind of in the mix now of what they're doing.
Mm, nice. And you're a graduate of Middlebury College with your BA and mm-hmm. 1996, and California College of Arts and Crafts at that time, right? an MFA
yep.
in 2000. My daughter, she was the last class to get VA to choose between a CCAC or a CCA. She has a bachelor's in fine arts in photography. So, yeah, that's a great institution.
Yeah. So we probably just missed it. I think that discussion started about a year after I left the CCAC.
Yeah, because she... Yeah, she graduated from Berkeley High in 2000. So, yeah, and like 4 years later, that was when it happened.
Yeah.
It was like, this is the last year. And then it became CCA, as if crafts is bad. Crafts is good.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually, interestingly, now that I'm in film, I was actually a sculpture major. But
oh,
the
really?
MFA program
oh.
is pretty interdisciplinary. So
mm-hmm.
I did do video work. I can't say that it was kind of film for gallery, not for broadcast.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely identified with the craft thing. I was sad to see it go. Because
mm-hmm.
it's a unique call. I mean, the facilities that it has and its history is really tied to the arts and crafts movement.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they have one of the biggest foundries and the glass department, all these things that are very tied to the idea of crafts. So I was on the craft side of the argument.
Yeah. So I wonder if you could talk about the rest of this team, which is kind of big. I mean, you know, you mentioned
yeah.
Arthur, who was actually, you know, on the ground in Sierra Leone, and
yeah.
Aji, Black Nature, Kamara, who is between both places. But you've got, like, a lot of folks. I mean, like, plus you have advisors, and that's pretty extensive, too. Yeah, if you could
yeah.
talk about, you know, who the team is and how you came to, you know, to this particular, you know, how did you happen to want to make a film, you and Zach, in Sierra Leone in the first place, since there are a lot of great stories right here in the Bay.
Yeah,
what took you there in the first place? And I, you know, definitely have heard you talk about what keeps you there. And then you can maybe talk about the team.
That's a good question. It's the Bay actually contributed to that decision, I would have to say. I had worked in Ghana. A very close friend of my mother started a school in Ghana. So I was there in 1994 and then again in 1999, helping start what became kind of a arts and culture exchange program. And I'm also a percussionist, and that was a big part of her program. So when I got to the Bay Area, there's a really great Ghanaian musical family, the head of the ethnomusicology department at
Berkeley. Yeah, see, Kayla Zexo, yep.
Yeah, exactly. So I played in his kind of dance troupe for a little bit and would go up as a percussionist supporting dance classes.
Yeah.
And so we were both at the time at the Alice Art Center, Malanga Center now, mm-hmm. and up in Richmond East Bay Center for the Performing Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, so we're talking late 90s now, there were refugees being resettled to the Bay Area from Liberia and from Sierra Leone.
Mm.
And I kind of noticed that because there'd be these, you know, the same kind of areas that would be used for dance classes. You'd go downstairs and it'd be kind of more like a party or a wedding. I was kind of like peeking in, potluck kind of events, trying to figure out what were these little parties that were going on. And then someone told me that they were being organized by a group that worked with refugees, and people had just been resettled. And it was a place to come together and to kind of, like, speak their language, just like a community center. That's what those places are. They're
mm-hmm.
community centers. So it was a chance to come together and kind of, like, play music from where you came from, eat food from where you came from. And I just took an interest in that story. And, you know, that's why people wind up in these dance classes, too. And music and dance are such an incredible carrier of culture. Zach and I started talking about how that's a great premise for a documentary. We could find a refugee from Sierra Leone or from Liberia and let them tell their own story because, you know, music, it kind of speaks in emotion, and so you can tell stories across culture. Maybe a story people don't want to hear. Maybe the music can help kind of seduce interest from people that haven't paid attention to that part of the world. But then for the community themselves, people just really connect and bond around music and the arts. But it was a great idea, but it was very naively conceived in one way because neither of us were filmmakers, but we kind of just decided we thought we could go out and do this. And we wrote a letter to the UN. We did some research and really just kind of wrote a letter trying to figure out exactly what it would entail on the logistics and permissions side of things to shoot a film in a UN refugee camp. And it just wound up on the desk of the right person who wound up being a co-producer on the film and came out to meet us on our first kind of scout trip in Guinea, which is the neighboring country to Sierra Leone where the refugee camps were.
Mm-hmm.
And so Zach and I are college friends. We both went to Middlebury College and very close friends, both live in the Bay. He lived and worked in Cameroon in South Africa. So we kind of like we weren't on these trips together, but we shared this experience of having worked and lived in Africa and really felt like, you know, we had very positive experiences in those places and with the people and felt like it was a place that was kind of misunderstood. And so that was how we came together to kind of want to tell that original story.
Mm-hmm.
And then to go down the list, not all my answers are going to be that long-winded.
Yeah, well, before you leave, Zach, I was just reading his bio that, he's got these television series, Live at the Fillmore, as in the Fillmore Auditorium. Is that
yeah.
Fillmore? Yes,
yeah.
And then he's got besides serving as acting director of Cine Institute, a film school in Guacamole, Haiti, and I've been to Haiti. I was in Haiti last year a couple of times, taking donations to some of the organizations that I got to know, and so I thought that was pretty interesting. Is he still doing any film work with people in Guacamole?
He's in Haiti right now as we speak. So yes,
really.
His interest in he met a guy named David Bell who lives in New York. Runs actually Refugee All Stars screened at the Guacamole Film Festival, and that's how we met David.
Huh.
And then Zach has been back and forth teaching at the school since then.
Mm-hmm.
And then. And that was pre-earthquake, too. And then the earthquake happened, and he actually went down and helped coordinate some of the... So a lot of the young filmmakers were actually... He helped organize a program, a satellite uplink, so that a lot of the young filmmakers in Haiti could get their footage out on the wire for news organizations right after the earthquake happened.
Nice.
And then... he actually has a project that is in a lot of ways similar to the All Stars project. He's helping a group of Haitian musicians record an album. And it's kind of multi-generational. Some musicians that haven't played together, some musicians that were big 2 decades ago, he's kind of put together this all-star group and is recording. That's in Port-au-Prince. And so that's what he's doing right now.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Wow. Okay. Yeah, and so some of your other folks. You mentioned a producer. You said your proposal fell on the right desk. Whose desk?
That's Alphonse Munoneza.
Okay.
So Alphonse is on there as an advisor, I think, to us.
Yeah, Rwandan national and a refugee himself, working with the UNHCR. What's that stand for? United Nations Human Rights?
High Commissioner for Refugees.
Oh, High Commissioner for Refugees. Okay, since 1992. Okay. Yeah.
And so Alphonse, unfortunately, hasn't been able to visit us in Sierra Leone since we started the We on TV project, but was so integral to the success of the All-Stars, and we've had a continued conversation with him around the work that he does. He's been... in Pretoria, South Africa, working with a media campaign to kind of combat xenophobia.
Oh.
And he's a really, really passionate, fascinating individual.
Wow, how fun.
And,
yeah.
And then
before you, I want you to connect he and I because I'm going to be in South Africa in January.
Actually,
the end of the year, for 3 weeks, I'm going to be there, and I need to meet some people. And I would love to meet someone that can connect me with the arts community.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that. He's great. He's a great musician himself. He's a bass player.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I said, we had this kind of short, maybe one pager for the documentary, and I think it just really spoke to him because he is also a Rwandan refugee, but worked in Sierra Leone during the whole kind of crisis period, and his strategy, literally, to like organize massive groups of people to make very important announcements, either about a food distribution, but sometimes more critical, which is they had to move almost 200,000 people off the border because of cross-border attacks. He would actually set up a sound system and play music because it would just attract crowds. But he just had this really wonderful way about him. I think he'll be doing that work for the rest of his life. He's just so committed to it. And like I said, you know, a musician himself, I think the idea behind the film really spoke to him.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. Cool. Anyone else you want to mention? Because you've got like a lot of people here.
There's a lot of people on there.
Yeah.
I'm going to mention Alex Reiser.
Okay.
Because Alex has he's been on all of the trips that we've done as an instructor for the workshops. He's on the scout trip. He's kind of helps me play a bit of we do some post-production work here, so we're still kind of creatively working on some of the films where we have a chance to get broadcast interest and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been on all the trips, and he's a musician, filmmaker who's based in Santa Fe. And then Paula Cavanaro is with me in the Bay Area and has went together with me in 2010 when we did our mentor training. It was the three of us, Alex and Paula and myself. And she is right now the person I've kind of worked most closely with to manage the group. And we play this funny, we wear multiple hats, which is that we're kind of operating a nonprofit via our fiscal sponsorship agreement at the Bay Area Video Coalition. So we kind of share this role as executive director for a nonprofit, but we're also kind of in this executive producer role with this group of fascinating young individuals. So we put out 3 months ago kind of I'll call it like an open call, just like a foundation would put out an open call for proposals. We did that within our group to serve two functions, which is to try and get all these wonderful ideas on paper and kind of help mentor the group to start to learn how to write a synopsis and a treatment to go out and seek support and to actually give us the tools to go out and seek support for them for their projects. But Paula and I also ran a Kickstarter campaign. So we actually had a pool of money that we raised through Kickstarter. So when we put out the open call within our group, we actually have an amount of money that's specifically for the support of films created in 2011. So she's been working really closely with me on that. And if you visit our website at weontv.org or the Facebook page, we have a short announcement about the names of the films that have been supported.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they move through pre-production, production, finally being able to get them out and distribute them and share them online, you can follow all those stories.
Oh, that's
great. So she's been really helpful with all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want our little audience to know that we're speaking to Banker White, and We Own TV is going to be screening as a part of the Cinema San Francisco, Bay Area Cinema, I'm going to make sure I have the right name, Cinema by the Bay, sorry.
Cinema by the Bay.
Yeah, which kicks off on Thursday, November 3rd. But this particular film, We Own TV, is going to be screening on Saturday, November 5th at 2 p.m. And Banker's going to be in the house, and some surprises are here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's
gonna
really
keep them
nice.
I'll keep them surprises. We might have some other local Bay Area guests that share the stage with me for a Q&A.
That's me.
And I think the name of the program is Freetown in the Bay.
Yes, Freetown in the Bay, that's right. And you are kicking off that Saturday screening. So that particular day, Saturday, is a great day to just, you know, come for the whole evening, like 2, and just stay until like 11 p.m. It's just like one great film after another. It's a really a wonderful program. And congratulations on, you know, getting this out so we can know about these wonderful films that are being made, you know, in Freetown, bringing Freetown to the Bay. And looking forward to having access to the films because I'm going to be out of town, so I'm not going to be able to see be there at the screening. So I'm looking forward to seeing them at another time when, you know, you make them public.
Yeah, some of them are out on the website. Actually, 3 films that were produced at the same time. This kind of based on video diaries that the group did, and those are Youth, Family, and Charity, and those are all on the website. Really wonderful films, and then. I'll definitely keep in touch with you and let you know when things are coming out. And anyone who's listening to this at weontv.org, even before the screening, if you wanna log on and see, there's great profiles for all the filmmakers in the group, so you can kind of get to meet them with these little video introductions, and then get a chance to see the films that they're making at the screening.
Nice, nice. And since you are, I believe you mentioned something about nonprofit. Did you mention that or not?
Well, we have a fiscal
nonprofit arm or something, or
agreement with the Bay Area Video Coalition. So they're supporting some of the collaborative films that the group makes.
Yeah, which means people can give you money, right?
People can get a give tax deductible donation through the Bay Area Video Coalition to support these young filmmakers,
So I just wanted to, like, let that people know that, you know, have some money and they want to, you know, do some early giving, because this is the time of year when people start sending you the ask.
This is my ask. Anyone who hears this, you couldn't go to a better place. It's a really wonderful group of young adults that have just kind of chosen to spend their time at Media Center. We have a production closet, 2 editing suites, and the thing that's really wonderful about this group is not only are they there making their own films, but the majority of the group is also mentoring, and a lot of them volunteering themselves to run our education program. We've got a staff of 3, and then under that we have about a dozen what we're calling We on TV mentors that are really amazing creative young adults that chosen to spend their time at the center, kind of helping provide both education and creating wonderful media to share out. So it's a great organization.
Right. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much, Banker, for joining us. And you have a good time on Saturday at the screening here in San Francisco in the Bay at Cinema by the Bay. And, I'm looking forward to staying in touch and seeing some more of these great films and perhaps connecting with you over in Sierra Leone.
That sounds great.
That'd be really fun.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, you take care.
Okay, thanks, Juana.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Under the billion watt blink of a sleepless city, she could make out the silhouettes of constellations. Trace them behind her teeth with her tongue, like how you spell a song with just your body. Give me a reason for living. Her own echo came back a love song that lullabied her into awakening, into her place in constellations that hold up heaven and inspire girls like her today. Despite and because of the lovelessness that built the buildings that try to scrape away at sunrise, she was alive. Like every river we dam, every tree we cut, like every man we mine, every buffalo we kill, like every fruit we pull. one by one, places them beneath her tongue and spends her lifetime revolving around the sun that she might understand the meaning of the life. And we all realize the meaning of our lives and live as if life depended on the gifts we tried to hide.
Oh, it seems as if I was kicked off the air. I'm not exactly certain at what point that happened. Okay, so I was playing from Flying with Poetry, She Lives. That was the the music that you heard after the lovely interview with Baker White talking about cinema. We actually talked about the Father Day screening of his film, We Own TV, looking at directors out of Sierra Leone, young directors of Sierra Leone. And this particular weekend, as I mentioned before, but I'm not sure, is set day of the dance. And folks that are going to be participating in this fundraiser for Haiti Resurrect will gather with participants to honor those who passed coming up on a full 2 years later. And all celebrate the resilience, survival, and self-determination of our Haitian family. And inspiring artists coast to coast with run lines in the Haitian diaspora across the globe have come together to bring a powerful offering to the spirit and to support the collaborative healing work Haiti Resurrect is engaged in Léogâne and Comière, Haiti. So a lot of people are hesitant to visit Richmond, California on a Sunday night, but it's going to really be great. And this post-industrial temple filled with magical sculptures and creative sanctuary. We will be drunk on the synergy of poetry, choreographed movement, medicine, the field, song, music, far from the hollow space of transformation space in our lives. And again, the Sunday feature, besides poem poetry, spoken word artists, Gina Grima, folk, soul songstress, modern jazz by Jean Louis Knight. So we hit the drumming by Daniel Gazelle, and I'm going to talk more about that camera on the air. And again, that's happening at the smaller space in the new Craneway area, which is a really local place, performance space in Richmond, California. And so we get next at the Mindverse Network, 1440 Cabernet South in San in Marina Bay, Richmond, California. And you can visit IUC Resurrect for the project. Also wanted to let you know about another event I'm going to participate in this evening, Saturday, which is called Envisioning Abolition, a Knife and Stirring Inside Our Research and Community Benefiting Critical Resistance today, Saturday, November 5th, 7 to 11 p.m. And it's going to be a wonderful night of beautiful, sexy DJs dancing and inspiring performances as we bring people and resources to celebrate our work to create abolitionist cultures of liberation and grow the sense of possibility for ourselves, our communities, and our movements. So the feature Angela Y. Davis, Climb Poetry, and Art Mission, Ruka and the April Fishes, Death and Arts and Poem. So that's all happening at the Uptown Body and Center, great performance space. Formerly an industrial space at 401 26th Street, Oakland, not far from here. 401 26th Street, Oakland. Again, that's benefiting critical resistance. So you can go to the Center of Bible Space and catch a few bills, Baker, White, and then head on over to Oakland for critical resistance, envisioning abolition. So I'm going to play the interview with Naima and her aunt, Asa. And I hope you all have been able to get over to see Rachel Perel. She touched down in San Francisco on Thursday through GDAP. The Razz Room and Hotel Nico through Sunday, tomorrow, so you can catch her too. It's always been great work for us to gather on air and broadcast this very yesterday. So here's Ice Resurrect again with Christmas and
So I thought maybe I could before I read your bios, perhaps you could take turns telling me about Haiti Resurrect, because I believe, Naima, that's your brainchild, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so whatever you tell us about about this project proposal that you're the visionary behind and founder of. And then, Fonta, perhaps you can come on in and talk about the fundraiser this weekend on Sunday.
Okay, great. Sounds good. So IUC Resurrect is a vision that formed in my imagination immediately following the earthquake that struck Haiti on January 12th of 2010. And I started trying to think of how myself as somebody who is in the Haitian diaspora and has never been to Haiti could be part of helping to support the rebuilding process. And recognizing that my strengths and the strengths of my community is and the organizing work I've been doing at home is so much around healing from various types of trauma. And I feel very sentient to how much emotional health, mental health, and spiritual health is connected to our capacity as individuals and as communities to be able to rebuild, to be able to organize, and to be able to, you know, overcome social problems. And so I started to form a collective of other artists, holistic healers, community builders with bloodlines in Haiti and the wider African diaspora to work in collaboration with a community in Haiti. And the mission being to help adjust the spiritual, emotional, psychological healing of survivors of the earthquake. So we started organizing amongst ourselves, building relationships with organizers in Haiti, and built a relationship with a particular community in Léogâne, the state of Léogâne, which is the epicenter of the earthquake, and worked with a rural community, meeting artists and healers and community organizers there, and figuring out how we could create some programming that would really help deal with some of the trauma from the earthquake. So we've had a couple of trips so far and are getting ready for our largest delegation yet this coming January. And the first delegation we had was coinciding with the one-year anniversary of the earthquake. And through art and movement and music therapy, through yoga, through meditation, plant medicine, peer-to-peer counseling, a mental wellness clinic, we have had and will continue to have this programming that's really dedicated to helping to transform that trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paya?
Yes, so this weekend, on Sunday, November 6th, from 4 to 9 p.m., we are holding a fundraiser for the delegation that's going to be going back to Haiti in January, and we call it Haiti Rising. And this fundraiser is going to be held here in Richmond, California, with the West Coast division, our arm of IET Resurrect, and in support of them. And so it'll be held this Sunday at the Nexus, which is a wonderful space here in Richmond in the Marina area, out at the Ford Building. If your audience knows about the Ford Building, it's been a space now that's been being reused for a number of activities, including restaurant and a place where concerts have been held. Well, we are going to be using one of the smaller spaces in the building called the Nexus, and it's located at 1414 Harbor Way South in Richmond. It's an intimate space, so people need to get their tickets online at the brown paper bag.
Brown paper tickets, you mean?
Brown paper tickets, yes.
Okay.
Thank you, brown paper tickets. You can get tickets there, or you can get tickets at the door. And it's a sliding scale of $15 to $25, or $35, which is it? I think it's $15 to $35 sliding scale for entry. And we're going to have performances and food and music and art sale, and it's just going to be a wonderful event. for the community to come out and support. We have a long line of performers that are going to be featured at the event, including Gina Breedlove, Marlene St. Just, Climbing Poetry with Naima, of course, Rochelle Dunnigan, Daniel Breville, Ambessa, Fia Polia, and Fia Polja, I'm sorry, and Abja doing some reggae. So it's going to be a great event. We really want people to support us. We're having Haitian food, Caribbean food served. If your audience can come out, that would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. I was noticing that you mentioned that on Fête Gede, the night of the Festival of the Ancestors, Haitian Day of the Dead, you were gathered to honor those who passed in the earthquake and all celebrate the resilience, survival, and self-determination of our Haitian family. And I was wondering, today, November 1st, is Dia de los Muertos, and I was wondering, Fête Gede, is that actually Sunday?
It's actually Sunday, November 6th.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How? So you did it like that on purpose, right?
Of course.
Okay. Yeah, that is awesome. Awesome. Maybe can you talk a little bit about Gede, Fête Gede, and the role of ancestors in Haitian spirituality?
Well, you know, Daniel Brevillard and his wife Portia,
mm-hmm.
the Haitian dancer,
yeah.
is really doing the Fête Gede ceremonies and rituals in Oakland earlier in the day. And I'm sorry, I don't have the location right in front of me mm-hmm. of where that's going to happen, but that's something that they do every year. Here in the Bay Area, because of Portia's connection with Haitian dance and with ceremony as well as with Danielle, so I can send you the information so that you can add that to your information that you give out to your audience. But I don't mm-hmm. have it in front of me now.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I just wondered if you could just talk about ancestors just in general. With regards to the Haitian spirituality, Naima?
Well, Gede mm-hmm. is the word for ancestor,
okay.
And ancestors hold a really powerful place in living culture in Haiti, which is one of the reasons that in our first trip to Haiti after the earthquake, a lot of people were talking too about what are the biggest needs right now, and what would international solidarity look like? Like, what needs to happen? A lot of people, in addition to talking about first needs of water and shelter and food, it's also this connection to those who have passed. Because of the chaos of the earthquake, so many bodies were never recovered, and there was not the, you know, typical ceremonial rites of passage. There was a lot of feeling about that, you know, just that absence of that process, both for mourning on a personal level, but also in terms of paying homage to the ancestors born of the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience with that is mostly connected to, you know, conversations that I've had, and then like a commemoration that we held on the anniversary of the earthquake to pay homage to those that passed in the earthquake. We collected names of everybody in that community and built a memorial site where people of different faiths could come and pay homage and pray in the ways that made sense for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that is definitely something that felt very apparent to me in my experience there, is just how much those who have passed are still a part of life and still revered so
mm-hmm.
strong, you know, walking with us all of our lives.
Right, certainly, yeah, because October here in the San Francisco Bay Area is Maafa Commemoration Month, so we just completed, you know, a lot of commemorative activities remembering our ancestors and, you know, thanking them for their presence and, you know, doing healing kind of work around some of the stuff we're carrying that's unresolved, that we need to resolve. And I know our audiences are familiar with you as, you know, part of, you know, the other half of climbing poetry,
mm-hmm.
and you come here a lot, and whenever you and your partner Alexa Garcia come, you know, you bring ritual. I mean, your whole, everything you do, I mean, when you came with the Green Mobile or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
you know, you drove across the country and everything was recyclable and reusable, and you had us take that water that was blessed, and I don't know, I think I still have it somewhere. You know, we blessed it as a collective, you know, at the performance in San Jose, and it just seems so fitting that you would, you know, add Haiti Resurrect to the kind of work that you all are doing, because this is what you do anyway, you know, as a multidisciplinary and multidimensional artist, activist, and educator committed to social, environmental, racial, and sexual justice, planetary health, and love expansion. Love expansion. Isn't that lovely? Love expansion. Yeah, and so continuing with your bio, you know, climbing poetry, the second half of climbing poetry, the Soul Sister spoken word duo, who have sharpened their art as a tool for popular education, community organizing, and personal transformation. You, along with Alexa Garcia, have stirred thousands of crowds in more than 80 cities, from Oakland to Atlanta, South Africa to Cuba to Havana, alongside visionary leaders and artists such as Erykah Badu, Alicia Keys, Jean, how do you pronounce his last name?
Jean Gray,
okay. Vandana, Shiva, Angela Davis, Amiri Baraka, who's going to be in town in a little bit,
yeah.
With Sunny Simmons, that's going to be so hot at Eastside.
Mm-hmm.
Put a plug in for that. Sonia Sanchez, Nikki Giovanni, Danny Glover, The Last Poets, and Dead Prez. You're the granddaughter of Haitian inventor, of Haitian inventor, a Haitian inventor. You don't give
yeah.
us his name. What's his name?
It's Samuel Smith.
Oh, Samuel Smith, okay. And you're working to enact your prayer that Haiti's resulting resurrection outweighs the current catastrophe. In the aftermath of the January 12, 2010 earthquake, you organized a grassroots collective that we're talking about. And I think we've talked about everything else there. Your aunt, who's on the air with us, Natalie Fanta Lawrence, has over 30 years' experience in urban planning and community development. What a perfect team you make. Haiti needs redeveloping, and you know how to do that, Fanta. You hold a master's degree in architecture from the University of California, Berkeley, and urban studies from Long Island University in New York. Are you a New Yorker, and you just came out this way to study?
I grew up in New York, yeah. I'm a Panamanian girl who was raised in New York, in Brooklyn,
okay.
and came out here, as an adult to continue studying and to raise my family.
Oh, wow. So we got Caribbean in the house. Whoa. Panama, Haiti, nice. long-time community activist and world traveler, Fanta, as her friends call her, has been involved in promoting humanitarian exchange between the United States and Cuba since 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And she last visited Haiti in the summer of 2010. Well, that's nice, because my Haiti that I saw was the one that after the earthquake hit last year in April and in August. So I didn't see Haiti before that. Not that it was doing that great before then, but now it's not doing well at all. So it's really wonderful.
Well, you know, that
mm-hmm.
trip actually, that trip was post-earthquake. So it was, you know, in July 2010. So
July. So it was post.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, so I did see the post-earthquake Haiti. And before that, I had been there maybe 20 years earlier. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was a huge change for me to see what had happened, and that it still, as you know,
mm-hmm.
is still pretty much in the same state as it was after the earthquake. So,
right.
So clearly the work that Naima is doing and others in her delegation is so important for that healing that we oftentimes put aside the mental health aspect of our healing and just deal with, you know, kind of, you know, shelter, food and shelter. But, well, you know, as we know, that deeper healing is the most important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, certainly, because otherwise it doesn't get to the core. and of the malady, and which means that, you know, the stuff comes up again because it's never been addressed. And I mean, you know, seeing your parents and your friends crushed, and or you're surviving something catastrophic like that, it's just really, really horrendous. And then not to mention not having a home for over a year, you know, living in tents and on cardboard boxes, or being homeless within the camp, and then the danger that might be prevalent there. Because when I was there, I was able to connect with sisters who are victims of rape, and there are a lot of women, you know, and girls who have been raped. It's not something that's new. I mean, rape has been used as a way to power and subdue populations, you know, throughout time, and as a weapon of war. You know, it's unprecedented. But yeah, we really wanted to. My friend Kamal and I, who adopted a young woman, has been putting her through university since I met her last year. We want to actually start housing. We want to start paying rent for families, single women, head of household, who might have lost their husband or their father, like this family did, and, you know, pay for them to have housing for the year, because it's just like $1,600, and a whole family can have housing, and that's like such a stress reduction reliever, you know, having a house.
I know, you're absolutely right, and it's amazing how little it really takes in terms of being able to provide support to families like you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is
one of the things that we're doing at the fundraiser on Sunday is we're featuring food by local chefs who have taken a challenge that we put out called 50 for 50. The challenge is to use $50 and make a portion of a meal for 50 people at least, that would feed at least 50 people. And part of the premise behind that, Wanda, is the fact that, you know, most Haitian families live on so little per year, something like $350 a year to feed an average family. So we put that challenge out there, and we've gotten some response from some very wonderful chefs who are coming through, even some who are donating completely their dish to feed people at our fundraiser. So it's really been a wonderful response, because people realize that we have so much here, it doesn't take much to give and to show people how important generosity is.
Oh, that's excellent. Can you name some of the chefs that are participating?
Well, one of them, one of the more famous ones locally in Oakland is Sarah Kernan from Hibiscus Restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be preparing some meal for us. A couple local Haitian cooks are going to be involved by the name of, Claire Lewis, St. Clair Lewis is going to be involved. Another local chef is Alice Wilson, who does a lot of work with corporate companies, and she's going to be supplying some of the food also, as well as some young cooks like Lori Camille, who does nutrition, especially nutritional advice for people. So she's going to be supplying some food. So it's been a wonderful kind of response from local people who do this work professionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell our audience who's going to be going on this next trip. Naima and Fanta, you can, you know, chime in, you know, whenever you need to. And are these people that have, you know, sort of been before, or how many people are new people, and what does it entail? Are they paying for their own expenses? How does it work, and how long are you going to stay?
Okay, great question. So we're really, really excited about the team that will be going down in January. We are asking each of the delegates to do their own personal fundraising for their travel expenses to and from Haiti and for their food. Mm-hmm. And as a collective, we've been raising funds for ground expenses, and materials. But all the money that we're raising is, like, specifically going to support some of our delegates who are also within Haiti already, not necessarily within the community we're working in, but, you know, there's, like, a group of people that, a group of young people who do yoga and meditation training for other young people, and they don't live in Comia, they live in Mier Valle, so we have to cover their transportation to get to Comia, like that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Our team coming from the U.S. consists of a few different people. One who lives in the Bay Area, her name is Sandrine, and she is Haitian-born and has been back numerous times, and she's going to be offering workshops doing artwork out of recycled materials, like making art out of trash, basically, eco art, and also doing like a self-esteem workshop that involves, it's a three-day thing, so it has different components, including body awareness and movement and dance, and includes Haitian pride, reinstilling a sense of Haitian pride, as well as self-care using natural and less costly, less toxic materials. And she's also facilitating a workshop teaching how to create solar ovens.
How nice.
Yeah. There's so many artists, so I went into depth about Sandrine. We also have a doula and women's health worker and massage therapist who's going to be coming and doing health workshops with women and setting up massage stations to help folks relieve stress. We have a yoga and dance instructor. We have drummers and singers who will be doing music, drumming, dance therapy. My sister, Leah, is coming down. She's a farmer, and there's a huge population of agricultural workers in this community, and they're really excited about doing skill shares on ways to compost. We're going to be constructing some composting toilets, which will also bring in conversations about health and sanitation around the cholera epidemic, but also figuring out how we can, you know, turn our own waste into, like, nutrition for the mango trees and for the other farming projects in the area.
Mm-hmm.
We have two Haitian American women who are writers and poets will be doing some writing and poetry workshops there. We have somebody who is going to be facilitating mask making for, like, emotional release and expression. And I might be forgetting some. But, yeah, it's a really an incredible team of folks. Oh, I'm missing some. There's some more folks that are like holistic healers who work with plant medicine and who also do peer-to-peer counseling, reevaluative counseling, which is a really powerful way that anybody, no matter your age, where you come from, can support each other. It's a methodology for healing from the hurts of oppression, violence, tragedy, physical upheaval, poverty, and loss. And it's a great alternative as opposed to just bringing mental health specialists that will come for a little bit of time and then leave. We're really trying to think of models that can sustain themselves after we as international allies have left Haiti, that folks can continue to practice peer-to-peer counseling, for example. So while I'm saying that, I do want to mention that, because that is a crucial objective of this next trip, to implement a model that can continue to sustain itself. So in addition to the actual programming, the workshops, the sessions, the mental health clinics, we're also going to be doing skill shares and curriculum development in teams, so that one person from the international team of IT Resurrect will be pairing with somebody from that community to teach every workshop. So if I'm going down and I'm teaching mural painting, I would team up with a painter in Comia, and we would facilitate our workshop together. And we're dedicating time both before and after the programming to talk about ways that each thing can be replicated and passed on for, you know, for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at your proposal, and you mentioned some of the organizations that you've partnered with, you know, around the culture activities and creative expression, the mental wellness and stress release, skill sharing for self-restraint and sustainable rebuilding, and then you mentioned the IET Cherie Healing Project, Palm Bee Shelter. My Gay Pa. Yeah, so these are these organizations, these relationships, are they already in place, or this is something that you're this is phase two?
These are all the relationships that are already in place.
Okay.
Yeah, most of which are based in Haiti, with the exception of the Friday Haiti Relief Coalition, which is Brooklyn-based, and Ike Shetty Healing Project, which is also Brooklyn-based.
Okay.
So we really recognize how important it is to build relationships with, you know, folks who are doing work already there. So we're really trying to create a new picture of what solidarity can look like as folks who are coming from the diaspora and are coming to, build relationships and work in partnership rather than just to come in with a lot of assumptions and entitlement of, you know, what we think is best or what we want to do. It's been, like, a really intentional process of how we've been going about the planning and the execution of everything. And a lot of the organizations that you named from that list are really important to make connections with, just so that we can really have a holistic picture, because we understand that the emotional healing part is connected to so many other parts, and how can we be seeing the whole picture even as we're really focused and strategic in what we're able to, what our capacity is to do as a small grassroots team of people.
Yeah, I just can't help but think about New Orleans and you know, the levees breaking and Hurricane Katrina and then the subsequent hurricane since then. When I look at Green Haiti, you know, that particular aspect of this collaboration. As long as you could talk about Green Haiti.
Yeah, Green Haiti, it was developed by Uki Saint-Ville, who is actually born and raised in this very particular community where he's been working, but he now lives in Brooklyn, so we formed a relationship here. But he's been doing work helping to figure out composting methods, soil health, water filtration, permaculture in Comies. So doing a lot of skill sharing in communities about that and offering trainings. And so he's actually going to be teaming up with my sister, who is also an expert in permaculture, farming, composting, that type of thing. So that they're going to be the pair that's going to be working with the peasant movement in Bigone and the Mango Growers Association and other folks who are already involved in agriculture to share ideas on that. And again, recognizing what is the connection between our relationship with the land, with the earth, and our relationship to ourselves and the spirit. So,
Yeah, you mentioned, the environmental health connected to the emotional healing, you know, through, you know, gardening. So you're not just gardening, but you're also gardening, you know, within yourself as you garden within the earth. Yeah, nice.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is just really a wonderful, wonderful project. So so some of your, is, like, how long are you going to be there? And is it just once a year, or do you go back? How does it work? Because I know now it's just you were there and now you're back. Are you going to be going back before, you know, the third anniversary or the second anniversary? Are you going to be going back after January, like maybe mid-year or something like that?
So this next delegation coincides with the second anniversary of the earthquake. I myself and a couple other people from the CORE Collective are going down on the 28th of December and staying through the 19th. So over 3 weeks. The majority of the delegation will arrive on the 4th and stay till the 15th. We're coming earlier to do more of the planning and organizing work and staying later to do more of the follow-up and to help just do the assessment and talk about how to do the long-term implementation of some of the programming models that we'll develop in our time together. This is our second delegation as a team, but our CORE Collective has, like, went again in July in order to have face-to-face meetings with our partners and do the planning, because we're able to talk on the phone somewhat, but there's nothing like being there in person mm-hmm. in order to really, like, have, like, we had a whole, like, meeting with, I think it was about 75 community members came out so that we could really talk about what they wanted to see happen, who wanted to get involved in what type of ways. This is some stuff that you just can't do over the phone, so we went in July mm-hmm. just to kind of follow up and get this January in motion. And in terms of the future, after this delegation, a lot of parents will see, like, how it goes, and if folks welcome us back, we're not trying to assume anything. I mean, last time people were like, please come back, let's keep working together. So we assume that, you know, we'll continue to return. But the goal of this delegation and what would really mark its success if we are able to have many of the things that our objectives this time through the programming turn into long-term models. So if the drumming and dance workshop becomes a every Saturday program that people from all over Comia can come to, or the mental wellness clinic continues, or the women's group continues, this is our goal, you know, because as much as there's so much value in this intercontinental collaboration that's coming together, we also recognize that a huge premise of the work that we're doing is how self-reliant healing can happen and how we have all the tools just within us, amongst us, to be able to do really transformative work by not being like, you know, this huge funded NGO or anything. Like, we're just all, you know, everyday people, and we're working with everyday people to try to make this happen. It's like, okay, we can create art out of things that we just find, things that would be trash, things that we find in nature, and use that as a way to express emotions that we didn't know how to talk about. Or we can really figure out ways to listen to each other and talk to each other in a way that can help us get over past trauma and help us move forward into a more promising future. We can, you know, it's all about what we can do on our own, and that's like the message that keeps kind of becoming echoing louder and louder as we're doing this work. Mm-hmm. And so this comes true even with us as a team of international allies. It's like, you know, we're here to work in solidarity and in collaboration, and we're reflections of each other. But like, this isn't even about like a service that we're offering that y'all can't do here. Like, y'all have the resources here, so we want to continue to support what can happen on the local level by doing more fundraisers and being able to send out money and send out support. But I recognize that, you know, my plane ticket alone, the amount of money that I'm spending to fly down there, if I could just give that $500 and give it to, you know, the women's movement that's already there in Comia, like, what could they do with that, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
And so I know I'm going to continue to build my relationship with this community and continue to visit, but my specific goal isn't to necessarily have a delegation every single year. I want to think about, like, strategically about how resources can have the most impact. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, just the time and the money mobilizing to bring a team of folks from abroad to go a long, long, long way if it goes directly in the hands of people there. So that's the thinking and the reason why we're modeling this delegation in that way, like why that's such a huge goal for us to be able to set things in motion on a long-term basis.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
I think that's so important what you said, Naima, because right now Haiti is supposedly, you know, has the most per capita NGOs and organizations mm-hmm. in the world, and mm-hmm. People don't need another you know, layer of organization that isn't, you know, that's set up more for its own survival rather than their survival. So
mm.
I think it's sensitive of you to understand that you can provide support to a certain extent, you know, as in a family surviving, providing support to a member of its family. But then eventually, you know, the Haitian people can and will take on their own survival and sustainability. So that's wonderful.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Well, let our audience know we're speaking to Fanta and Naima about Haiti Rising, a benefit for IET Resurrect, this Sunday, November 6, 2011, from 4 to 9 p.m. at the Nexus at United Earth Networks in Richmond, California, 1414 Harbor Way South, Suite 1010 or 1010, at Marina Bay in Richmond, California. And you can get your tickets at Brown Paper Tickets. I know you have a website for Haiti Resurrect. Why don't you give that website for folks?
Sure. It's haitiresurrect.org, and that's spelled A-Y-I-T-I, Resurrect, R-E-S-U-R-R-E-C-T, .org.
Right.
And right there on our homepage is all the information about the benefit, and there's a link to get tickets or to see the Facebook event so you can spread the word far and wide.
Yeah, and then after the event, you can still send money, right?
Yes, you can. Yep, you can always donate through the website, and you can do it online that way, and there's also information if folks are interested in sending larger donations through our fiscal sponsor, you know, for like mailing a check. If people didn't want to do the online.
Super, super. Yeah, cool. Naima, we're not going to let you get away without a poem or something. So can you share like a poem?
Yeah. Well, I sent you the track, so if you want me to perform something over the telephone,
yep,
I do.
Yeah, because we're taping it, and I'll play the other when I broadcast it.
Okay, give me a second to think about what might be there.
No problem.
Appropriate.
Yeah. So, Fanta, when you were in Haiti last summer, were you in this location? Were you in this place?
No. We were in Port-au-Prince, basically, summer before last, we were working. With an organization that we kind of just found an organization online, and because we didn't have any direct connection when we were traveling, and we ended up working at a food kitchen for about 8 days. But it was just so interesting being in Port-au-Prince and just this the capital of this nation, and seeing the level of devastation that continues and continues even to now, in terms of, it didn't appear like any work had been done in terms of trying to clean up or to rebuild, and people were, as you were saying earlier, just living in tents all over the city and in really awful conditions for people to have to live in. But everybody, the resilience, it's amazing. And the level of people's ability to be patient and also giving even to us as strangers, always concerned about us and really happy to see that we had come down to help and to volunteer. So it was an amazing experience for us.
Wow, that's nice. Yeah, it was just tomorrow, there's a lot of things happening around Haiti this month, which is great. Tomorrow, Wednesday, November 2nd, from 5 to 6:15 at the University of San Francisco School of Law, 2130 Fulton Street, San Francisco, room 102, they're going to have a conversation with human rights and housing experts examining the use of United Nations and Inter-American Commission on Human Rights Instruments, comparing their effectiveness in two countries on opposite ends of the economic spectrum, Haiti and the United States. So they've got a lot of great folks that are going to be there talking about this. And perhaps someone could drop some flyers by about Haiti Resurrect, because I'm sure this particular audience would be the type of audience you want to have, there in Richmond on Sunday, and they will be the kind of people that will be interested, because, Hastings School of Law, connected to the Institute for Justice and Democracy, go back and forth all the time. In fact, when I was there in August, I stayed with their Haitian counterpart, on the ground, one of the most famous attorneys, doing, civil justice work in Haiti. I stayed in their offices. So, I could definitely announce it, but if you have any flyers, you know, maybe
okay.
If somebody might go, but I'll definitely make sure. I'm planning on going, so I'll make sure I announce it to the audience there so they can know about the event.
Thank you. We'd appreciate it.
No problem.
See if we can get over there. Tomorrow's our day of Occupy Oakland.
Yes, yeah, sure is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like so.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of good things to be doing with that time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Naima, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay.
So I chose to read a piece that I wrote in the moment that I found out about the earthquake that devastated Haiti. And at the time, I was in India, and I was taking an overnight train, and everybody gets woken up in the morning with tea and a paper. And so I hadn't held a paper in weeks, and I was looking at it, and my eyes have a habit of auto-scanning for Haiti, and sure enough, in the bottom left-hand corner, there was an article about Haiti, and that's when I read about the earthquake that devastated the nation. And so there was no pictures, there was just this small article, and I just remember I was completely in that moment just wafted with the most intense sadness that was completely visceral and felt so outside of me. I can only compare it to how I felt walking into the slave dungeons in Cape Coast, like that very physical, like just got like slapped with this intense amount of suffering. I just started sobbing and sobbing and sobbing before I even really understood what was happening. And once I got through that process, I just started writing. And so what I'm about to read is what came out as, you know, unedited after that. So this is what I'd like to share, and I'm calling it Aftershock. I have not seen the pictures yet of blood caked with ash and anguished faces, photographs burned into memory, stench carved into day there. I have not glanced the 2D broadcasts of desperation thrust onto the screens of our consciousness, but I can already see the familiar forms of vacant bodies, dim wet eyes, vision stripped, futures vanished, stories rescripted. I can already picture the burnt girl child, scalding limbs flailing in Vietnam's napalm blow. The woman's lifeless palms turned skyward on Tamil Nadu's shoreline, swept empty by the tsunami's cesspool swallow. The wide open scream and unclosed hand of the students fleeing Soweto school massacre, cradling their comrade's departed body. The corrals of runaway children forced into soldiery, sleeping asylum in rows of hundreds like factory farm fast food flesh or sardines or slaves. The torsos of Middle Passage ships, the tattered surrender flags spanning night ward rooftops, the mass graves of Auschwitz, the bombing of Gaza, 9/11, and the 9/11 before that. And the countless top-secret murders of CIA, COINTEL, and SOA-trained terrorists, I can picture the sound of screams that fall in a city when no one is around to hear it, the unfamiliar echoes that escape the freshly felled old-growth buildings, the last breath swishing upon the extinguished flames of strewn street lamps, the homeless houses, the pathless roads. I can see the smells putrefy the clouded air, the sweat of near death mingling with newly crossed corpses decaying in the chilling heat of an earth bombed with bricks. I can picture it. Even though the Deacon Herald had no space for a photo op, just a tiny front page, bottom corner, one column synopsis, and the AFP correspondent forgot to sign his name and demembered the memory that all things are connected to everything. His subtitle reads, Nature's Wrath, and I laugh through my tears at the thought of Mama's revenge against a nation that gave birth to itself in shackles and raised itself up in shanties, refusing to surrender to IMF debt measures, paybacks to French slave masters, rafts turned back to turbulent seas and hurricanes near lethal as Katrina with less press than Brittany. as if mom hasn't been force-fed crack since 12 generations back, given asthma from secondhand smog and napalm-induced heart attacks. It's no wonder she's having magnitude 7 epileptic seizures in the most underdeveloped regions of her body. Mind tricked into believing, like the rest of us, that the destiny of the poor is more poverty and bad things happen to black people. At least we learn how to turn the lights out when night falls and how to sleep again amidst the insomnia of insanity. May our rest in peacelessness inspire awakening today. Humanity lost 1 to 500,000 souls between sunsets, grew twice as many wings between dawns. Our guardian angels are plotting life after death from the lunch counters of heaven, and hell will not survive our mind's insistence on some ending different than this, and our fists clenched high, and our wrists rebuilding, and our palms wide open to the phoenix taking sprout beneath the ash.
Mm. Yeah.
Can we clap?
Yes. Oh, wow, that was beautiful. That was really beautiful.
Thank you, Wanda.
Yeah, that was awesome. I'm really sad that I'm not going to be in town for the fundraiser. Yeah, I'm going to be going down to Southern California. A dear friend of mine is making his transition. Hopefully he'll wait for me so I can get there.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, so I come back on Sunday, but I don't think I'll be back before you finish.
Mm, got you. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so be with you in the spirit.
Bless that journey. I know you'll be there in spirit, and I hope that you'll have time with your friend, and that will be really meaningful, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So are you here, or are you traveling to get here?
Traveling to get here.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll be coming from Florida, where we're doing a couple shows.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, safe journey, and thank you again so much. This was a really nice extended conversation with your auntie. This was great. Ooh, this is so special.
Well, thank you, Wanda, for being able to be flexible and do this with us so quickly.
Oh, yeah.
We appreciate it.
Oh, it's going to really be wonderful. I'm sure my audience is going to love it. We're going to broadcast it on Friday, so you'll be on the air while I'm in Los Angeles. We're going to broadcast it along with another interview with a filmmaker who is doing media work with young people in Sierra Leone. You probably know the film, The Refugee All-Stars.
Oh, yeah.
Banker White, I had an interview with him earlier today, and so I'm going to have both of your interviews are going to be the show on Friday.
What time is the show, Wanda?
8 o'clock. Well, I'm not sure. I'm trying to think. Well, it depends. If I broadcast it, if I can find some technology, it'll be 8 o'clock. And if...